You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. And our show is brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth. Segway, Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville. He's pretty smooth. At Vince Sports on Twitter. Boy, did he put out a stat about third quarters for the Vols. We'll get into all that and more. Vince, how you doing?
I'm good. Appreciate the segue. Hope you guys are doing well.
Well, we said it all week. This UT-Arkansas matchup was going to be very, very intriguing because of our conversation that we had this time last week with you, the way the schedule looks the rest of the way for Tennessee. If you don't get this one, yikes. Texas A&M, Auburn, and Florida still remaining on the schedule with only Vanderbilt as your hope for a win. If you don't beat Arkansas, things looked really good in the first half. And got to be honest, this is now two second halves where you go, it can't get any worse. Georgia and now this game where the Vols looked absolutely pathetic and lost in the second half. Looked like a totally different team now twice this year.
Yeah, and they had a short-term philosophy to, you know, end up with a good result at halftime yesterday, decided to run, and look, that will work for a certain period of time, and it did. I don't think you can sustain that in winning college football today. I mean, I know you can't do that. It got them, they're protecting their quarterback clearly and trying to manage through it. They had success running the ball. It's just, then you start to have the mistakes. You can't stop people. You're forced to have to throw a little bit more and you can't run as effectively. Teams make halftime adjustments and Tennessee is not doing a very good job of that. It's a multitude of things, but you're right. It is ugly to watch, and it wasn't great in the first half, but at least it wasn't. You thought that there might be some sort of improvement coming out of the bye week. When you take a step back and look at the totality of the game and the result, Darren, there was an improvement. I don't care if you say, well, this guy did this or this guy did this, and we thought we did some good things, and it's what Jeremy Pruitt was talking about today. It's a results business, and the result was not improved. Just like that whole discussion about catching Alabama and everything, it's about the result, and they're not catching Bama, and they're getting passed over by first-year head coaches as well. And, you know, I told you guys on the show last week that I thought Arkansas would win that game. And it's not good when you come out of the bye week looking like that and getting that kind of result that fans just won't stand for.
Nope. And by the way, I lost count of how many three and outs they had on offense in the second half. Like I was like, how many times are they just going to go three and out every possession in the second half? I mean, and expect to win? Like you're toast. And pretty pathetic, and what they were trying to do. Like you said, they were pretty effective running the ball, but at some point you have to do something a little bit different. Nothing was working. And I know we've talked about this a lot. And Garantano got hurt on that play where he kind of did the helicopter jump and gets flipped around, and that would be the end of his night. But I don't know how many more times we have to say it. I don't understand what they see that we don't, because I said the two guys in particular sandwiched in between Garantano and Bailey, and I guess Brian Maurer is first up. Like, Brian Maurer I don't want to be too critical of a student athlete, but it's just not good enough. And I don't know what they see in him, but there's nothing. There's nothing there. And I don't know how he can be your best option. And finally, they leave them no choice, just like what we've been saying every time they've tried to take Garantano out when it's not an injury, to give these other guys any opportunity to do something, to give them any sign of life. They fail miserably. I don't know how they have gotten to this point where this has been the best option, and finally it gave them no option but to finally put in the freshman. To this day, it's like a lot of Butch Jones moves in the past. I will scratch my head and never understand what Jeremy Pruitt's approach and this coaching staff approach has been to this point with their quarterback play.
Well, fans, and you're right on those points, Darren, but what fans' rebuttal to that has been that we've seen and heard is, well, he's given Garantano 4 years, but he'll only give Maurer or Shroud a couple of series. Well,
I don't need to see 4 years from those guys. Honestly, everybody would lose their minds if they saw 4 years from those guys, in my opinion.
Well, lose their minds, and the coaches would lose their jobs far before that. So you would never see it. And it's people act like Jerry Garantano has never completed a forward pass in his career, and he is not. He has not been good enough. There's no doubt about that. His inconsistencies when he turns the ball over. I get all of that, but part of the dilemma is what is behind him. And whether it's Trout or Maurer, those guys are not the quarterbacks of the future. And Maurer, you're right, it's tough because he's had so many things happen in his personal life. He was very forward and open about talking about, you know, thoughts of suicide. He's dealt with so many concussions and a lot of adversity. He lost his grandfather, lost his childhood dog. So there's just been a lot of things in his personal life, hamstring injury in the preseason. So there's a lot of things working against the kid. We've never talked to him, so I don't know what kind of kid he is, but you root for somebody to come back from adversity like that, but just have not been able to string together anything to tell you that he is a quarterback of the future. Same with JT Shroud. And then with Harrison Bailey, they just don't feel he's ready. And interesting, Jeremy Pruitt told Tom Hart and the crew from the SEC Network that they didn't want to throw him out there and put him in harm's way, basically. That's something he has not said to us in the media and the Zoom interviews and things like that. I thought that was very interesting. That, to me, is an indictment on his football team. If he knows that he puts him out there, he's gonna get killed and crushed and ruin his confidence, things like that. So that's the problem, is they're not the alternatives. And so now their response has been to dumb down the game and protect the quarterback. Well, today Pruitt was talking about we need to be a lot more aggressive. He's talking about being aggressive. So now they've gone from putting players in harm's way and then you're calling out routes on third and four. There was a 40-yard throw to
didn't understand
now,
that play at all.
Right.
Didn't understand.
To not never throwing the ball. Alabama, they're super conservative. And even what didn't make sense too from a play calling standpoint, Darren, is they were so conservative the entire first half. They are backed up like inside their own 20 and they're throwing the ball. And Garantano gets sacked. You're going to be conservative, and then in the final seconds of the half, you're going to throw out of your own end? That didn't make any sense. So there's just a lot of things that are a part of that quarterback issue. And today he even said that the circumstances at quarterback are relative to those around you. I would disagree. To some degree, yes, but over extended periods of time, the quarterback can enhance and should the circumstances around you.
I just don't understand all this hubbub and what you pay Jim Chaney and make him – is he the highest paid OC, right?
Yeah.
50 rushes to run the ball 50 times and only attempt 21 passes. And quite honestly, most of those passes were all late when they were trying to play catch-up. I mean,
right.
you need Jim Chaney to attempt 21 passes when you're behind – and try to run 50 running plays, which was bulk early on when, you know, they really weren't, they weren't, I mean, you don't need anybody. You could get anybody. The point is, you could get anybody to do that game plan.
Darren, late in that ball game, until the garbage time at the end and Bailey trying to come back, and we'll get to that decision in a moment to not kick the field goal. But Tennessee, for almost towards the end of the game, had 42 passing yards. 42. Good luck into the
what was it on eight attempts, right? Eight attempts for 42 yards is what it was, or 10 attempts?
It was very little. But still, it's not like they're being productive with the attempts or completions. And then if you look at the last three games, Tennessee, three games combined total, 317 yards passing in a three-game stretch. Kyle Trask had 474 against one of the best defenses in the country Saturday alone. He might have had that total in, you know, a couple, two, three quarters. So you just can't win that way. And I don't know if they're going to go back to opening things up. To me, you can't win just run. You need balance and you need explosive plays. And one of the better things that Garantano does is throw down the field and you take those deep shots. And so they've got to have some explosive plays. And it's just, you know, and just real quick on that decision at the end, they're down 11 points, about 5 minutes to go. And Jeremy Pruitt's a 42-yard field goal. It's fourth and four. And Jeremy Pruitt decides to go for it after they ran on the first three downs. So now Harrison Bailey, his first pass of the game is on fourth down.
His first career pass is on fourth and four.
No, he played a little bit a few games ago. I think it was the end of the Kentucky game.
That's right.
Yeah. But, I mean, just first meaningful throw, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And so you wouldn't let him throw before that, and then you're going to let him throw on fourth and four. Yes, you could say there was a pass interference, early contact, but you take the points and you extend the game. And I asked Jeremy Pruitt about that in the post game, and he said, well, the distance, we thought it was too far. And, you know, Samaglia, the kicker, had some issues and health issues during the week, blah, blah, blah. He made a couple longer field goals in the game. So I don't understand that. And, oh, by the way, you're putting them in a tough situation. And then I followed up and asked Pruitt about it today. Did you go back and reconsider that? And he said, well, it didn't work, and we didn't get the first down. So, yeah, if I had to do it again, it'd be different because it didn't work. So I just didn't understand that. Oh, by the way, after that, guys, they won on the final drive when Bailey was throwing all those checkdowns to the running backs, barely moving up and down the field. Then they got to – you know, at the end of the game, kick the field goal to try to get to within eight so you can onside kick and have a little bit of time. You're throwing a ball into the end zone in the final seconds of the game. It didn't, you're down two scores. It doesn't matter at that point. He did bring that up where they looked at that as well. But, I mean, just those kind of things are head-scratching.
Vince Ferrara is with us. And, Vince, you just hit on so many details that it's funny, the three of us, me, Chase, and Darren, were all texting each other while this was going on. So we were doing this in real time before we knew the results of what they tried. But that was odd to me. On top of all the other things that have gone wrong, the game management, I have not seen something at that level where it was head-scratching for what they were doing. I go back to the question that we hit with two weeks ago when they were going into the bye week, is what is their outlook of Bailey? To me, so much is riding on that. And I've used the reference of Kyle Shurmur saved Derek Mason's job. He'd been long gone had they not had Kyle Shurmur emerge his true freshman year when they gave him the reins late in the season. He won a couple of games against some weak teams. No, it wasn't Tennessee the freshman year. They beat Missouri and Kentucky his freshman year, which were awful teams, but Vanderbilt was horrible. But as we know, Kyle Shurmur got them to two bowl games and some wins over Tennessee, and you know he gave them good, solid SEC quarterback play. They haven't gotten that from the guys that they have. So here they are with Harrison Bailey, and you're right. They did say, hey, we didn't want to throw him to the Wolves, et cetera, but is he just not as good as we thought, or what's the outlook for him? Because in hindsight, it looks crazy that they went to him when they did, and not maybe just give him a chance earlier in that game or even start him in that game?
Well, to me, it was more of an indictment on Maurer. I mean, there was just a lot of panic there, and Maurer had a couple of near interceptions, at least one that was a clear drop. Oh. So, that's what you can't do is turn the ball over. That's where Pruitt will yank you, and that's been the case. They've gone to Maurer or Stroud every time. So I think at that point that their only decision was to go to Bailey. I'm not ready to say the kid isn't good. He was behind the eight ball in terms of his preparation, but at this point, I think if Garantano isn't ready, it's got to be Harrison Bailey, and you got to figure it out. Enough of this. You see how the week of practice goes and all that, and it may have to do that based on Garantano's availability, which Pruitt right now says day to day. If I'm preparing Harrison Bailey first team, I'm letting it go. And I'm letting the kid have an opportunity with a full week practice. I said that over the bye week. If they were going to do it, they needed to do it from the jump. I'm not going to just limit his practices during the week and then throw him out there. And so that's what I would do. Here's your opportunity to see what the kid can do with a full week. And if it doesn't work out, guess who can come off the bench because he's done it successfully for you if he's healthy. So I think this is the chance. It's 2020. It's not the typical football season where you feel like you have to wait for this, this, and this. They got to let it go. Maybe the kid surprises you when you don't think he's ready. So I don't know that they're going to do that. I think they're going to wait it out. And then if Garantano's ready, I think they'll play Garantano. But honestly, at this point, that's not what I would do. You got to see what you can, because maybe you can do more with the offense. Jim Chaney, I just don't think has the trust in Garantano. And if this kid shows you, build some trust with them, then maybe you can expand the offense. You can do some things and you have some sort of upside. If you're going to call plays like they did in the last couple of games, they're not going to go anywhere one way or the other, whether Garantano throws interceptions or not.
That's really interesting, because I go back to the question. Floyd Reeves was the one that put it sort of in the NFL terms, mm-hmm. of you're a coach, you have some job security, you got the extension, you know that your quarterback play isn't good enough, and you've got a recruit that you think has some good tools. So I haven't watched Bailey play that much, but he looks like he throws a pretty good ball. You can see the raw skills that he does have. So Floyd's thing was, let the kid play. Even if you take a step back this year, you'll be in better position to start next year, which will be critical for you. If you can assess honestly, your team's really not going to go that far anyway this year, especially with the quarterback play. So all of that, of course, that we know that what they did. They stuck with Jarrett Garantano, and they still lost to Arkansas. So the question is, if Garantano doesn't get hurt, do you think Tennessee could have won that game? Especially knowing the way they were calling, the way they had sort of tightened up, and the momentum was completely going against them at the time he goes out.
No, I don't think they win that game, because it is much more than just the quarterback position, which is what everybody is focused on. But Tennessee can't stop the slant pattern. Now, I don't know why Arkansas didn't go to it over and over and over again. I don't get it. When they did it, they were successful. And they decided to try to do zone reads and options with Franks. Throw the stinking slant. That's what everybody else has done. And that's what everybody else will continue to do, including this Saturday A&M, and they're really good at it. So the defensive issues for Tennessee continue to be a problem. And obviously, as Darren kind of alluded to, the third quarter has been a mess. I mean, on the season, Tennessee has been outscored 81-24 in the third quarter. It's actually, they've only scored in their four-game losing streak. They only have 7 points in the third quarter. In the second half of games this year, they've been outscored 88-7 in the second half. I mean, it doesn't matter what the first half is. You have no chance. And so those are really alarming numbers, clearly. And then third, the opponents have had 17 possessions in the second half and 17 drives in the third quarter, 9 touchdowns and 5 field goals. So it's much more than the quarterback. I don't think the changes. I think it's the issues in the second half, confidence level, not making the adjustments that the opponents are. And so it's to be that bad, it's a lot of different things. So it's more than just the quarterback, even though that's obviously a big one that they need to figure out if they're going to do anything in the future in improving this program.
Vince Ferrara is with us, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville. I want to go back to a quick conversation that you were just having about Jim Chaney. So you do or you don't think that a change could happen there, not this year, but if somebody's got to go, do you think it's Chaney?
On the staff, no, I don't think so. Unless, I mean, not right now, not during the season. Now, could it after the season? Oh, yeah, because Pruitt's not going anywhere. So if the seat's getting warmer, there's changes to the staff. And I think Chris Wincke, obviously, with the quarterback position being such an issue, I think he's one that certainly you could see a change there. Jim Chaney also has not been the quarterback's coach. He's involved with everything on the offense, but he's not the quarterback's coach. He helps out, obviously he runs the offense, but he helps out with the line and he's not there every day. You have a specific quarterback coach. Maybe they make a move with that and have Chaney take over, the QB coach duties as well if he's there next year. But I think part of the problem, Chase, is the fact that this coaching staff, this program, has constant changes every year to their staff. Under Jeremy Pruitt, they had a bunch of them. And then they also move guys from one position to another. I think I might have mentioned this to you a couple weeks ago. Jacob Warren, tight end for Tennessee, he talked to the media a couple weeks ago, and he said Joe Osavet was in his first year as tight ends coach when he was an off-the-field analyst type of role prior to. He said that Coach O admitted to that he didn't know a whole lot about the tight end position, that he kind of had to learn, but he wanted feedback from the players, and then he was invested. And Warren was trying to really compliment him, but when you have a young head coach, you hired a couple of new assistants that are still on the youngish side, you're moving guys to different positions, like Brian Niedermeyer, the linebackers. And now you're having a coach of the tight end position that has to learn the position on the go. I mean, that's a lot of moves every single year. Oh, by the way, you lost your strength and conditioning coach, first year head strength and conditioning coach as well. I think that's part of the issues is at some point it catches up with you, all of the staff turnover. But I think you will see more of that next year because the coach is typically the last to go.
So how much do you think the staff trusts Jeremy Pruitt right now?
Well, I mean, anytime things aren't going well, Chase, it's certainly a possibility. I mean, Jim Chaney, there's reports that, there just wasn't, trust or camaraderie between, Smart and Jim Chaney. I don't know exactly how that relationship was, but for him to move from that situation and come to Tennessee, it was a little bit initially head scratching, even though, he talked about how he loved his time at Tennessee and all that. So when things aren't going well, I'm sure that maybe relationships could get strained. Is it enough for him to leave on his own or for Pruitt to part ways on him? I don't know, but I think to me with his track record, he maybe should have the most rope out of them because he has developed cornerbacks and done a good job. I think the bigger issue is he's really limited or spooked or however you want to talk about it and not have the trust because of the quarterback position. And then you wonder how much Pruitt is coming in there and saying, all right, now we got to run the ball because he did mention that earlier this year. We got to be more committed to the run. So then they run and can't do anything. And now Pruitt's talking about we got to be more aggressive. So is there a frustration level there? Does Jim Chaney think, all right, I'm trying to do what you want me to, but then I can't? Not saying that's the case, but you have to wonder that when they keep going these other directions from game to game and not getting the results either way. So, there's probably it could very well be some of that behind the scenes and us not being around the program like we typically would You know, it's harder to know that right now exactly.
How much concern, you know, while we've been talking, it's come out that Sam Pittman tested positive for COVID-19. Barry Odom named the interim coach at Arkansas. So do you think that should be a concern on everyone's mind since Tennessee just played Arkansas?
Yeah, it's still so new. I mean, obviously Pruitt's press conference has already been done, so we didn't get a reaction. And Pruitt, you know, has talked about how they haven't had any COVID positives in like 6 weeks for a long time. So that you hope that there's not any sort of carryover, that they, if they talked in pregame like coaches typically do, that they both had their masks on and they weren't at risk. So I'm sure it's something that it will heighten the stress level in the walls at UT because they've been able to avoid it. You just don't want to add that to the complications. So I don't know exactly what the ramifications will be, Chase, but I think it's certainly worth concern and maybe, you know, extra tests and just to make sure you don't get any more people that have to be shut down because of it.
I'm still waiting for the news today that Notre Dame's going to have to shut down their program after Saturday night.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I know, don't get me started on that. Like, I mean, please, you limit fans, but then you're going to let them all run onto the field.
Unbelievable.
I mean, are you really concerned about COVID, or is that just a presentation? Come on.
Just unbelievable. Unbelievable sight to see. I mean, just, you know, putting a wet blanket on an incredible game and an incredible finish, and then you see that, and it's just like everybody just all of a sudden goes from unbelievable, you know, just, wow, that was awesome, to bitter beer face. Like, are you kidding me? And shaking your head like, oh, my gosh, what are you doing? Anyway.
Yep. Well, Vince, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Have a great week.
Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville, joins us every Monday at noon. A lot more to discuss with the Vols. A little bit later on, you'll hear from Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach at 1:15. But first, Darren, you have a word. Give us a word.
If you do have a reaction about what you just heard, then give us a call. We're going to be talking about the rest of this hour, 615-737-1025. And I do have a word about this weekend's major golf tournament, along with pro and college football. It's going to be a full slate of action this week and in the weekend. There will be no shortage of action, and DraftKings Sportsbook is your place. It's America's top-rated sportsbook, and it wants to put you in the center of it all to celebrate Sunday's action. DraftKings is going to ensure all new users that you are covered up to $100. Yep, that's right. You bet. They cover you risk-free on Sunday. Sunday betting on all of Sunday's action, DraftKings will have a special promotion and an odds boost every day of this year's tournament at Augusta, Georgia. So download the top-rated sportsbook DraftKings app now and use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, you'll ensure all Sunday's bets up to $100 by using the code 1025GAME. During your sign-up for a limited time, that's only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Risk-free coverage paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
First of all, you got to give credit to Arkansas. They really outplayed us in the second half. Outscored us. You know, in fact, shut us out the second half. So not a very good job there. We got to do a much better job coming out at halftime. You know, but if you look at this game, to me, there's lots of things that we've got to do, obviously, to correct. The first thing is we got to play a lot cleaner game. All right? And that starts with me, starts with the coaching staff. And we didn't play very good the second half at times.
Jeremy Pruitt talking about the Vols' 24-13 loss in Fayetteville against Arkansas.
What did he just say?
I was going to say, we got to play a cleaner game. Other than the two picks late in the game, what was the not clean game? What did I miss? Was there fumbles? I don't remember a bunch of time. I mean, Vanderbilt, I mean, you're going to hear that from Derek Mason. They had five turnovers, so you're not going to win on the road. No matter who you play in conference play with five turnovers. But, I mean, the game was well out of hand with those two picks. I mean, what is the cleaning up the game. What did they – I don't understand. I didn't understand that at all. Not a clean game?
But that's what he does a lot, is he says a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's what people think that's what people are kind of tired of, that he doesn't have – number one, he doesn't have good excuses, but he doesn't have an explanation of what's going on, why these problems are here.
Can I say this, too, about him? Like, I just think it's time for him to stop talking about how he has seen what winning looks like. And, you know, we get it. You were on Nick Saban's staff. But it's not going to make a Tennessee fan feel any better that you've seen what winning looks like when you're still miles and miles and miles away from that program. I mean, you're hundreds of miles away from your program looking like their program.
And you weren't the head coach.
Tennessee fans just want to see results, man. They just want to see where this is going in the right direction. And that's now four in a row. They have looked really, really bad. I mean, that stat right there, getting outscored in the second half, is really alarming this season. I mean, in the third quarter and in the second half.
You could just feel it happening, unfolding.
It was quick, too. It didn't take long. It was quick.
They got tight.
I mean, it was already – they were already down 11 in the third quarter. It's not like they waited till, you know, Arkansas finished them off in the final 2 minutes. I mean, it was already – it had turned in a hurry. What was it, midway through the third quarter, they already had their first lead? I mean, it didn't take long. I mean, that's what happens, as I brought up with Vince. You keep going three and out. You brought up our group text during the game, and I told you guys there's nothing. And we all said it right then, not after the game was over, questioning. I told you guys there's nothing anyone could tell me to convince me in a two-score game where you need a field goal that you don't kick the field goal right there. There's nothing. And that was at that moment.
Right.
It's just the wrong call. I mean, it's absolutely the wrong call.
You have a good, yep, experienced field goal kicker who's pretty reliable. You have shown to everybody on that drive that you're not super comfortable with the new quarterback you just put in there throwing the ball. And so you have a chance to declare the drive as a success because you'll stay in the game. And you've gotten the quarterback's feet wet, at least. He's been in the game. But to ask him to throw his first pass of the game on a decisive fourth and four.
And it's a one-possession game if you make it. One
right.
Possession.
You stay in the game. You stay in the game, and you give yourself a chance. Now, it was pass interference, right? That should have been called. But, you don't always get the call. And ironically, of course, in the context of what this is what I know is, it seems like it doesn't take much to have somebody throw a pass interference flag on that one for whatever reason they didn't call it. But that was bizarre because it just seemed like that was if you ask 10 football coaches, what are you doing right here? Are you kicking it? Like Jordan Rodgers, this is his job as an analyst. You sort of say it. You want to say it before they make the decision, right? Not after.
Yep,
and right. He said before the snap, he goes, I think I'd be kicking it here.
Yep.
That was the feel. You could just sense that. But I am mystified with the quarterback situation, and I have been for several weeks now.
I think everyone is. I mean, how could you not be?
Well, we've been saying, and look, I think all three of us would be characterized as outsiders. Chase, I know you follow the detail more, and you follow on a deeper level than Darren and I do, but it's just been so obvious for a long time that every time you see Maurer, he's not an SEC quarterback. I don't know how they thought that, because we're not doing hindsight here. We discussed that exact situation last week, is if they had to make a change at quarterback, who would they put in? And Maurer did exactly what we thought he would do. He struggled on the road. He was fortunate he didn't throw an interception. And he didn't come close to even getting a first down while he was in there. So I just don't see why they didn't feel like they had no other cards to play. Even though the freshman hasn't had the reps that they want, you don't have anything to lose. And I think from a PR standpoint and a long-term standpoint, he could have gotten out. If he were shrewd with the media and had a good relationship with the media and the fan base, a CM Newton style, right? I think he could have made the case. I'm going to play the freshman. I don't know what we're going to have here. We want to see if the kid can play. And it may cost us a game. I don't know. He's going to make some mistakes. But if they start that kid and they lose that game, that looks a whole lot better than doing what they did in losing that game. You know what I'm saying? Like in the yeah. gain that they would have gotten by beating Arkansas in the big picture doesn't really mean a whole lot. You agree?
Yeah. I mean, how could you not? I mean, Darren used the phrase coaching malpractice. There's so many examples of that with him, whether it's kicking the field goal or, and I know Chaney, you have to involve Chaney in this too, but you run the ball, you don't throw it until fourth down. I mean, you don't really, I never feel like they gave him a chance, gave Bailey a chance to succeed. And if you're going to go to him, if you're going to see what you have, then you have to call plays that he's going to be able to succeed at. And
they
give
were
him
so predictable.
Yeah.
So predictable.
And they're predictable in every facet, just about. And it goes back, and, you know, I was tweeting with somebody on Saturday. I'm not a Tennessee fan. I grew up a Vanderbilt fan, but I grew up watching that team for a long time. I have family members that went there, family members that are fans. So I have grown up around the program too. And the thing that I can't wrap my head around is why it's taken this long, and yet they're still nowhere near close to being where they should. And I know that that's the frustrating part with Tennessee fans of why can't they get this figured out? Fulmer's back, and yeah, it was a tough situation to come into, but he was very quick to identify Pruitt as his guy, and right now you're stuck with him, but it's a bad hire. It just, in my opinion, it's a bad hire. And they're going to have to figure out if they can turn it into a good hire, or are we going to be having a conversation how long ago was it, Darren, that you asked us, what does it look like in 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Was that, we had that, what, a month ago? That conversation a month or so
Not
ago?
Not that, and I don't even know if it was that long.
But, no. I mean, that's... I would say 2 years from now, he's not the coach now. I mean, after what I've seen the last handful of games, I mean, I think I said he'd still be there because they're stuck with him. But, I mean, now you're going to have somebody, one of the boosters, say, here you go. Here's the check.
Well, that was a step back for sure. We got a long way to go. Philip Fulmer has got to be a good guide here. This is his guy. Right, he gave him the extension, so they're stuck with him for the near future. But that's where, again, going back to the Floyd Reese GM type of question, looking big picture. You know, he's seen enough of Jared Garantano. What's the best case scenario this year? 4 wins, maybe. Now you're looking at maybe 3 wins, unless you steal one. But in the big picture, you got to find out if this kid can play. Right, and now you're gonna. Now, if you want, you can throw him into the Lions' den and play against Texas A&M. But wouldn't he have been better off, even if he lost at Arkansas? At least he'd had a game under his belt, because you've got Texas A&M, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Florida, on the stretch run here. But what a great time to evaluate a quarterback! It's hard. It's against a little bit of conventional wisdom, but in the big picture, he's not going to get anywhere unless he gets way better quarterback play.
Willie, if they had started him, if he had played the entire game, we're having a different conversation today. Win or lose, we're having a very different
right.
conversation.
Right, because it's in the context of you're trying to find out. That's why Chaney, I'm not as critical of Chaney as some. I know the price tag is going to dictate criticism because there's just going to be scrutiny at what they invested there, but I understand what he's trying to do. He doesn't want to take chances with a quarterback he doesn't trust.
Yeah.
Well, when you look around college football and you see the creativity around every Saturday, around a lot of programs, and you tell me how many times you've been wowed by anything they've done under Jim Chaney.
Right.
Where you just go, wow.
And sometimes with a young quarterback.
That's why you pay
right?
him the big bucks.
And sometimes with a freshman quarterback.
Can you name that moment? No.
No.
You can't.
Not at all.
But how much of that is him? And how much of
that is the question
is
we don't know.
Pruitt
with his hands all over everything. Yeah, I
just outside looking in from what I've gathered,
it probably feels like Pruitt.
Right. Yeah. I think he's a jerk to work for. I think that he wants so badly to be the CEO and have his hands on everything and be in control. And really, he's just getting in the way of certain aspects of the game.
Darren, what did you say? I remember the day after Vanderbilt destroyed Tennessee in Nashville, and it was Helton, right, was the offensive coordinator, who, of course, he got out of there, Chaney comes in. But what did you say was the dynamic going on? This was Pruitt's first year,
that,
I believe,
that
right?
Him and Pruitt were not on the same page. I told everybody that Helton had already taken the Western job before that game, so he already knew where he was getting out of there. He had already taken it secretly behind the scenes. That's what I was told, that job was already – he knew, and that him and Pruitt – I'd been reporting that all year, that him and Pruitt were at odds, that they were not seeing eye to eye, and Helton was tired of Pruitt getting in the way constantly, and yeah. I mean, that sums it up. That's what it was. And Helton couldn't wait to get out of there. I mean, he was leaving no matter what. It wasn't going to work. Whether he got the Western Kentucky head coaching job or not, he was out of there because he felt like Pruitt wasn't going to let him be him. And, you know, when guys get hired to be them, you got to be you. That's what you are. That's what you're hiring. You can't turn somebody into you. If you want you, don't hire me and you do it. I mean, that's how it works at any level. Like, don't hire people to turn them into what you want. You hire people because of something you see that they do. They're having success doing something, and you want that, then you let them be them. If you want them to be you, then don't hire them. You just do it. That's the way I've always viewed. Really, it falls into place for anything. It's not just coaching. It's really anything. Don't hire people and then try to change them.
Yep. And so many times you see that.
Oh, so many times.
You're gonna come here and you're going to do what we tell you to do because we know what's best. No, I have my style. You have your style. If you're hiring me to do a job, let me do my job. That's how I look at it. Because otherwise, I'm going to resent working for you and not want to be here. And you're going to resent hiring me because I'm not doing what you asked me to do. So it's just simply not going to work.
Well, where do you think people are going to ever accept you telling them to be more like you or do things the way you want and not what you were hired to be, right? You're hired to do something a certain way because of what you bring to the table. They saw something in what you do, and then you get them there, and then you want them to do what you want them to do. Well, where do you think the good ones – how about that?
Yeah,
the good ones are really going to stick around. They're gone.
They're not.
They're not going to stick around.
Because you have yes people. You have the oh, sure, I'm just
you can
happy
always
to be here,
find
whatever.
Yes people. Always.
And there are some people that that's all they want because they want it their way, and they want you to say, yes, absolutely, I'll do anything you ask me to do. And then, boom, you're fine. But how successful are you truly going to be when you have that? You're not. So if that's what Jeremy Pruitt is looking for out of his staff, then we're going to be having this conversation for a while. We just are.
Yep.
And shame on Philip Fulmer for allowing that to happen.
But when you invest that much money in an offensive coordinator, I would think, with the experience that he has, I would think that would come with
–
well,
yeah.
I would think that would come with the territory, right, is that he would have the reins. So I don't know anything. I cannot speculate on what the dynamic is between those two. Well, I just find it interesting that a lot of it centers around subpar quarterback play, right? I think they've made some strides in the offensive line. They've got a decent running game. They've got some talent at wide receiver. And, Darren, you're right. There's not a lot of creativity, especially relative to what you see around the country. So I keep going back to the quarterback, and I just think they missed a window to try to get that narrative going. We got to get a better quarterback. Right, we don't know. It's not those guys' fault. Those guys are giving it everything they've got, but we want to try to see if we've got something better, especially long term. Because as it stands now, you're going to have a big question mark going into next year.
Well, I will say this: if that is truly, you know, your reasoning, you know, what the SEC network put out there, then that's on you. That is absolutely
that we don't want to throw him to the wolves.
Yeah, that you don't want to put him in harm's way. Then
yeah,
that's on you.
In harm's way. Yeah, yeah,
because that's on you
because there's a lot of freshmen playing.
Yeah,
around the country.
Right, and if you don't have anything better to hold off, if that's your mentality, and you don't have anything better, then that's on you and your staff. You got three guys in front of him, and if none of them are any better, then that's on you. That you want to hold him back when you see young guys playing all over the league. Don't forget, has anybody watched, you brought up Indiana, has anybody watched Indiana football? Do you know their quarterback? Penix?
Yeah, he's
good. How does he look? Oh, is he good?
He's pretty good.
Looks yeah, good. He was a decommit from UT. He was a decommit to Jeremy Pruitt. And he said, his words, this is Michael Penix, after conversations with this new staff, it seems that I am not wanted. I'm not being wanted. And he decommitted from UT. Instead, Pruitt signed Shrout.
So Butch Jones signed Penix? Is that what you're saying?
No. No, he was talking about Jeremy Pruitt. He said Jeremy Pruitt and his staff were going after Penix, and he said he decommitted because he didn't feel like, I guess maybe it started with Butch Jones.
I think he committed to Butch Jones.
And then
when Pruitt
then
took over,
he said, it doesn't seem like this new staff wants me.
Right. I think if I read that right, because I was reading Vince's tweet, I think that's what happened. And of course, to be fair, that wouldn't be the first time that happened, but
it's
just in hindsight,
but it's to the point is that's on you. You have not, you chose to bring in Shrout and Maurer. I mean, that's on you. I mean, once again, if you don't want to play young guys, which I think is in today's game is ridiculous. Like, we see young guys all the time. I mean, come on. That's such an old school, old mentality. That's a dinosaur mentality. That's what coaches thought 15, 20 years ago. You know, just go through the process. You know, let's take it slow. You don't want to hurt the kids, confidence early. That is an old school coaching mentality.
You
like,
can't
do that anymore. Past all that. But if you can't get any, and that truly is what you're going to stick with, okay, that's fine. I don't agree with it, but if that's your mentality and you're not going to change and you still have that dinosaur age mentality of, hey, probably by year two or three when they're seasoned, then they'll be ready, we can turn them loose, then it's up to you to have three quarterbacks that are better.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got to have better options.
Alabama and others have been able to do that because, I mean, they stock the cupboard.
It's no fair right now to even compare them to the Alabama. You're trying to get to a next level to get closer to Alabama with the entire picture. Even though it's interesting because Pruitt's the one that makes the connection to Alabama a lot because of his background there. But it's a simple quarterback play. Like I do wonder, what do you think would have happened if Garantano didn't leap up in the air and get a concussion on the play? I would have been really interested to see, would they have stuck with him all the way through based on what they were doing, which was basically, we're not going to pass, right? We're just going to see if we can sit on it. But once they lost the lead, they were going to have to open it back up. What would have happened? We'll never know. But we know that Maurer is not the answer. But we knew that before the game. That's why it was crazy that they didn't put Bailey in when Garantano goes out, which gives you an open way. I mean, it's nothing against Garantano. You're saying, well, he's hurt. Now this is our chance to put Bailey in. They go to Maurer. And then Maurer doesn't get it done. They don't want to throw Bailey to the Wolves, and then out of desperation, they put him in when they put him in. It made no sense to me.
It's pretty clear that Jeremy Pruitt has had to learn how to talk with the media. And, he's gotten better. He's certainly not an expert, and he's not great. But this is a tool that was – he was not very good at, right? He has had a huge learning curve on just handling press conferences and the media. This is a prime example of a more seasoned guy or experienced guy or just a guy who's not afraid to talk. Like James Franklin came in here. He didn't have any experience as a head coach, but you could just tell that cat was wired differently, right? I mean, and didn't mean I always agreed with how he would handle his press conferences, but you were not going to get him off of his game of what he thought he needed to do. where Jeremy Pruitt is kind of all over the place and he's learning. And this is a prime example of kind of going back to what you said. I think it was Willie, you, the one who put it out there, about if all you had to do was come out and just be honest and say, hey, I think we've got this off week here. It's time to see what we've got in this young man. There's a lot of hype around Harrison Bailey, and it's just time for us to see what he's got. And maybe it's going to work, and maybe it's not. But you know what? It just feels like it's the right time to experiment with in what we've got. Like right now, we're just not satisfied with the quarterback play. We've got an extra week to prepare him for Arkansas, and we're just going to kind of turn it over to him and see what happens. I'm not going to make any promises. Maybe, hopefully he lights the world on fire, but there's a real chance he looks like a freshman, and it's just he's just not ready. But you know what? We're ready as a staff to find out, and I hope you're ready as a fan base. That's all he has to say. That's it.
I agree.
And today,
and everybody looks at the
it's a
the last
completely
few games
different. No matter what happened today, it's a different narrative. But instead, he is chosen. I'm not going to put him in harm's way. He's not ready. He's just a freshman. He's too young. He's not ready for. And so you get a lot of that, and then you say all that, and then you still go to him anyway. So now everything, the whole narrative has changed, and you get it. You get what you get.
So who starts Saturday?
Yeah, good question.
Against A&M? I don't know.
And we know that Garantano has a concussion, so that's part of the equation. How quickly does he recover? So, who starts Saturday? I think it's a.
Okay, who would you start Saturday?
I would have started Bailey against Arkansas.
Two weeks ago,
I said that, and that's me not knowing. This is me from afar. But now that I've seen what I've seen, I'm even more confident that I would do that because I have nothing to lose at this point.
Sure. I don't disagree. I think now just go for it. See what you got.
Well, but we said that 2 weeks ago. I brought up the point of he's secure. What is he worried about job security? He just got that from the AD, which we don't agree with. So what is he scared of? He's not scared of he should be scared of getting fired. He's not going to get fired. So job security is not an issue. You made it very clear to your AD, hey, you got to have long contracts. That's the only way you can recruit in college football. Nobody's going to sign with somebody who doesn't have a long contract, which is ridiculous. But nonetheless,
nobody
it
was
worked.
Coming after Jeremy Pruitt.
It worked, and he got an extension still with 2 years remaining. Okay, what are you worried about? You got
go
a long contract, man. You got guaranteed money. What are you worried about? Just do it. Pull the trigger. Do it.
We haven't changed our opinion from 2 weeks ago then.
Nope. Oh, all right, Chase, you've got a word about bad beats.
Oh, yeah, I do. But, you know, it was a good weekend. It could have been a great weekend. It was a good weekend. And why? It's because of BetMGM. Don't bet on Michigan teams. Don't recommend it. Arizona State, Herm, the underdogs, they were barking. Wish they had gotten the win for silly underdogs. But I did it all with BetMGM Sports, the king of sports books. And right now, if you haven't taken the plunge yet, if you're still thinking, should I? They have an offer for you. New customers have a chance to win $100 in free bets when they place a $1 moneyline wager on the Patriots or the Jets. And if either team scores a touchdown tonight, you win. Just use the bonus code 1025GAME100, 1025GAME100 when you make your first bet to take advantage of this offer. If you're ready to start betting with confidence, like I do, I have some confidence right now, and turning big plays into paydays, then sign up today and discover BetMGM's innovative parlay selection tools. I love those. They have boosted odds specials, had a Derrick Henry prop yesterday, daily promotions, and much more. Download the app today or go to BetMGM.com and use bonus code 1025GAME100 to win $100 in free bets when you wager just $1 on the Patriots or the Jets to score a touchdown. It's always showtime at BetMGM Sports. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years or older. You must be present in Tennessee. For gambling problem support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer blackjack and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.